So anyway, this is what Bhagavan says here, you know. Even if somebody whose conduct is terrible, you know, is terrible, and that person worships me as a mumukshu, understanding the meaning of mumukshu, that they've understood the problem and they seek Bhagavan, and they're not seeking anything else. They have that single-pointed mumukshutvam, desire for liberation. That person, he says, sadhu eva, saha mantavya, that person should be considered as a sadhu, as a person who is a good person. That person who seeks Bhagavan, who is a mumukshu, even if they have all kinds of stuff going on that makes them narcissistic in this way or that way, or whatever you want to accuse them of, that person should be considered as, mantavyaha means as a potential, that person should be considered to be a sadhu. And because that person is samyak vyavasitaha, that person clearly understands. Right? Because the seeker, that person clearly understands me. You know, has a nishta in me, is devoted to me. And so that being the case, that person should be considered as a sadhu. And then he says, well, let me talk about that for a moment. And then these two verses kind of go together. I actually love these two verses because it applies to us. It applies to all of us. Mm-hmm. Because all of us come to this knowledge, you know, with whatever baggage we're carrying. It's a fact for every single person. None of us are good, you know. We are all carrying a lot of stuff. We may be trying to be good, but in so many ways, we're not, you know. Sorry about that. Just how it is. So many ways we're not. We're not as good as we would want to be. And so everybody's in that situation, and this verse, Bhagavan takes it to this extreme. Even if you are extreme in that situation, a little top-heavy on the you know, inappropriate conduct, you're a little top-heavy on that, yet you are a mumukshu. You're a mukshu, and you're a devotee. Devotee means to Bhagavan, I want to know the whole, I want to know who you are. And for such a person, you know, the fact is that mumukshutvam and that devotion and that shraddha, that seeking, which is really also brought about by discrimination of experience, you know, and analysis and discrimination of your experience, and it's also considered a great punya, that you have a tremendous amount of punya that would even bring you into that state of being a seeker. And so that trumps, that punya, you know, and that mumukshutvam trumps everything else. And it trumps everything else because in the end, that mumukshutvam will, that devotion and that mumukshutvam will cause the bad habits or the complexes or the wrong behavior to drop off. That's the idea. Just like for us, say, you don't put yourself on that extreme slot, though some of us with our complexes, we can put us pretty far to the negative. You know? Not very many people put themselves really far to the positive. You know, inside people can pretend like they think they're great, you know, and put up a show like they think they're great, but not very many people really do. Most people think that they have this problem and that problem and they're this problem and nobody loves me. You know? Nobody loves me and I don't deserve love. That's the complex of our time. As Kohut will say, you know, I'm not lovable. That is the overarching complex of our era, according to Kohut and many psychologists that follow him. I'm not good enough and I'm not lovable. You know, and a person really feels that way, how they come off is instead, they don't come off as feeling I'm not good enough and I'm not lovable. They come off as though they think they're better than everybody else. And that's just a defense. It's not real at all. You know, it's just a you know, kind of a barrier that's put up. But this is the idea, the understanding. Whatever defenses that we have And some of those defenses bring about a lot of violent behavior toward other people. You know, nasty, aggressive behavior toward other people. That's just a defense. You know, it's defending a hurt. So all of these type of behaviors are trumped, really, and do not interfere necessarily at all with a person's mumukshutvam. Because a lot of times, the different pains that we have actually work to our advantage. You know, we don't want to have the pain, and we don't want to have the social awkwardness, you know, and not feeling, you know, comfortable with other people and all of these various types of complexes that we have. But all of these different complexes and pains that we have and inappropriate ways of behaving can also turn us into seekers. You don't have to have all of this to turn you into a seeker. You know, you could have had it last life. In other words, you could have, whatever course that you have had to go through, the ups and downs that you have had to go through in order to make you assimilate your experience in such a way that you become somebody who really wants to know the truth and to know the truth of yourself and know the truth of Ishwara, if there is an Ishwara. Whatever ways of acting out and whatever pains you've had in your mind, if it has led you to that mumukshutvam, and a mumukshutvam where the wanting to know Bhagawan, as they talk in the Bhagavad, the wanting to know me, to know Ishwara, trumps everything else, and that is what is primary to you, then you should understand that that person is a good person. That person is a sadhu. These other things will drop off as a person exposes themselves to teaching and exposes themselves to knowledge. The other aches and pains and the ways of acting out will drop off in time. And I think that for all of us, that is in fact our experience. That's your experience. As you mature, you know, as you mature, your ability to tolerate the world, to tolerate yourself, and to tolerate the world increases, you know. It increases. And so this next verse, this is exactly what Bhagavan says. He says, Kshepram bhavati dharmatma, Kshepram bhavati dharmatma, Shashwat chantin nigacchati, Shashwat chantin nigacchati, Kaunteya pratijanihi, Kaunteya pratijanihi, Name bhakta pranashyati, Name bhakta pranashyati, Kshepram bhavati dharmatma, Shashwat shantim, Shashwat shantim nigacchati, Kaunteya pratijanihi, Name bhakta pranashyati. He says, that person, the sudaracharaha, the one who has so many problems and only thinks about himself or herself, that person soon, kshitpram means quickly, they soon become a dharmatma. Dharmatma means one who's devoted to dharma, one whose mind is focused on dharma. Because focusing on dharma is really focusing on Ishwara. There's a natural, Swamiji actually says this really beautifully in his bhasha, there's a natural moral order. The whole creation is not just a natural scientific order. It's a natural moral order too, which means where we can have a golden rule. That's because there's a moral order. We know that all beings, not just me, wants to be happy. You know? So do unto others as you would have done to yourself. Don't do to others as you wouldn't have done to yourself. That's a general rule. It's generic. It's something that applies over the whole world to all beings. That's because there's an order we know on an emotional level, on a human level, on the level of being a living being, what it is that all beings require. You know, all beings require to feel loved, to feel respected, to feel wanted, love, like, respect, you know? And all beings are seeking that in one form or another, whether they're plants or animals or humans. That's what we want. We want to feel loved and liked and respected. And so there are, say you recognize that that's what you seek in yourself, you can know that that's what other beings seek too. You know, and we do know that. We don't have to think too much about it. It's not like I think I'm the only one that feels that way. You know, we know it's a moral order. There's an understanding there. And so here, what he says is, the person who is recognizing Ishvara in the recognition of Ishvara, there's also not just the recognition of a universal order in terms of this physical manifestation, there's the recognition of Dharma, of a moral order, an ethical order, that all boils down to ahimsa, or kind of a do unto others as you would want done to yourself, as that ethical order that is natural for you to follow, to find yourself moving into when your focus is on Bhagavan. And so here he says, and such a person quickly becomes a dharmatma, you know, as they become a seeker and as they start to gain this knowledge. And that person who becomes a dharmatma, somebody who puts dharma, to look at it like this, putting dharma over their own personal interests. Another way you can say it is putting Ishvara over your own personal interests. Another way of saying is putting moksha over your own personal interests. When you say put over your own personal interests, it means, does a way of looking at that, is this behavior that I'm engaging in dharmic? So you ask yourself that. Is this way of relating to this person dharmic? For a mumukshu, if the answer is no, then even if I end up doing the negative behavior, my value is for doing the dharmic behavior. That's where the value is. If the value is for dharma, as opposed to adharma or behaviors that I would want to get rid of, then I'm a good person. And if that's where my value is, the other things will drop off in time as I gain this Shashwat Shanti. Nigacchati means nishtya, gain, firmly know, firmly go to, firmly gain this Shashwat Shanti, a shanti that is timeless, is eternal. In the practice of Dharma, we gain a relative shanti. In other words, as long as I'm dharmic, as long as I'm loving, as long as I'm giving, as long as I'm generous, as long as I'm doing the right thing in a given situation, I feel a shanti. So dharma gives me relative shanti. But it doesn't give me timeless shanti or eternal shanti. Because dharma, I have to keep doing it in order to reap the results of it. You know, you say I'm doing dharma, I'm getting relative shanti, and I do an adharma, what do I get? A shanti. Adharma, a shanti. And you can say, that's not fair, because I've been doing all of this dharma all along, I just do this one little adharma, and you're punishing me for it. But it's the law. Dharma, shanti. Adharma, a shanti. That's the law. You can't say that the laws are going to change for you. It's like the law of gravity. I shouldn't be subject to the law of gravity because I'm losing weight. As I lose weight, I should be able to go up. You know, the laws simply don't change. And so you do an adharma, you reap the results. Say if somebody does is in really nasty and does a real adharma to you, hurts you, does some aggressive act, some wrong, durachara, does a really bad act toward you, you know, and you let them have it. You give it right back. Give it to me, and give it back right back to you. And then Bhagavan gets mad at you, you know, as though you've done something wrong. When all you've done is retaliated, they kicked me, I'm kicking you. I've only retaliated, they did it to me, I'm giving it back, eye for an eye. And you'd think Bhagavan would say maybe, good boy, good girl, you know, eye for an eye, you know, you really let him have it. Good for you. How do you feel about that? Do you feel good about it? No, I don't. Why don't you feel good about it? Why don't you feel good about it? That can make you really irritable. why can they do that wrong to me and I can't retaliate? If I retaliate, I feel badly. That's not fair. But it is fair, because you yourself have done an adharma. They did an adharma, they'll feel bad. You do an adharma, you'll feel bad. That's how it is. Yeah. And so that type of law, you know, we learn that and assimilate that. But even in the learning of that, you live your life, you know, as dharmically as possible. But you're never perfect. Never perfect. And so whenever there is an adharma, your shanti goes, you know. And then even, this is interesting too, even our complexes that come up, you know, what really are the results of negative behaviors, somebody's negative behavior, you know, not necessarily yours. You know, when you're a little baby and being hurt and abused in this way or that way, or say you're 7 or 8 years old and your parents are screaming at you as a stupid idiot, or whatever terrible things can be happening to you as a child, those are all adharmas. And you're reaping you're being hurt by them. And so all of those little hurt parts are going inside. And so we have to sort through all of those complexes and work through all of them as we grow up. So now, here we are growing up and these complexes are acting out, you know, acting out into the world. And then as they act out, say you're hurt and so you're striking out because you, the little child that has been hurt, is so angry and so hurt, you know, and feels so bad about herself or himself, you know, that you're striking out into the world. Well, when you're striking out into the world, you know, you're actually carrying on, you know, that flow of adharma. Because as my father beat me, I'm beating you. See, that's very, very, that's what happens. Mm. You know, my mother treated me like this, I'm treating you like that. It's almost unconscious. Somebody has to break that chain. But what happens is, he hit me, I hit you. And so there's the flow of a dharma. What if, and this is how people really transform and how people change, at some point you realize that flow of a dharma that is holding you, and you start and you understand it, and then you start treating the one inside who is hurting or who feels worthless or feels not good enough or whatever all of these complexes are that we have, you know. You start treating that one in the way that you should have been treated when you were little. You treat yourself in that way, the way that you should have been treated when you were little. You now are not a dharmic. You are dharmic. And the dharmic you is holding the hurt, the one who was hurt. See what I mean? The one who was hurt by a dharma is now not perpetuating the adharma, but is held now by dharma. That breaks by one who is dharmic. That breaks the chain. Otherwise, what happens, and until that chain is broken, and at every moment that it's not broken, where there's a dharma acting out of any sort, there's no shanti. And so the shanti that you enjoy in the world is going to be relative. You can do your best, but it's going to be relative. For a seeker, for somebody who gains knowledge, there's a shanti that is not relative, that isn't subject to coming and going, that isn't subject to dharma or adharma, yours or anybody else's. And that shanti is the shanti of yourself. So the nature of the self. So what he says is that person becomes a dharmatma, gains relative shanti, and with that relative shanti is able to gain this knowledge, this self-knowledge. Without the relative shanti, it's very hard to gain self-knowledge. In fact, because the mind is too agitated and too concerned with the world in order to have room for that knowledge to come in. You know? You'll notice with a teacher, especially a master like Swamiji, you know, one thing he does in his whole teaching style is he kind of releases you from yourself. Well, he releases you from all of your complexes and all of your hurts and all of your worries and all of this by telling stories, telling some jokes, get everybody laughing, get everybody in good cheer. You know, he does it very, very well. You know, he gets everybody just engaged in a totally different type of mindset where there's just some peace and the mind isn't engaged in this worry or that worry or what so-and-so did to me or what I did to so-and-so, all of this kind of stuff. He wipes all of that out a lot just by so many jokes and by his own laughter. And he'll create that space where everybody's engaged, you know, in a totally different type of mood. And then in that space, he will unfold something. Mm-hmm. And the mind is available for it, you know. Kind of catches. So it's you know, and the thing is that our mind is very, very capable of momentarily being very available for knowledge, right? Because we can do meditative techniques, or we can bring in some laughter, you know, or some good cheer, change the atmosphere. And then when your mind is in that more pleased, calm atmosphere, when this knowledge is unfolded, your state of mind is your relative state of mind, the relative shanti that you enjoy, is capable of recognizing the absolute shanti that illumines it. The absolute shanti of yourself illumines the relative shanti of your mind. And your mind is in, because it's enjoying that relative shanti, it's very available to see that. And once it's seen, once that is, as a person really recognizes that, then that relative shanti is recognized even when the mind is having problems, right? When the mind is, you know, subject to its own adharma, it acted out and it did this and it did that and it got upset and all that kind of thing. All of that is taking place in the, what they say, shashwat. Shashwat means eternal, timeless. It's taking place in that shanti which is timeless. Nothing disrupts that shanti. So Ajnani is the one who is able to hold the agitations in the mind. All of the agitations in the mind are held in the shanti of the self because that self has been differentiated. And so he says, you know, a person who seeks me, you know, soon, even if they're the worst of the worst, if they're still a mumukshu and they have that shraddha, that bhakti, that devotion in me, they will quickly... Kshipra means quickly. They will quickly become a dharmatma, one whose mind has some shanti, one who's from all of these, this type of inappropriate behavior, kshipra quickly falls off, and then they attain that shanti, which is not subject to dharma and adharma. That's the thing. In the relative creation, you can't escape dharma and adharma. You can try your hardest. You know, even the Sikhs, I mean the Jains in India, series, they're one of the very ancient religions in India. They try so hard to do this ahimsa, non-injury, that they wear a gauze mask so that they don't breathe in any insects. And they have a brush, like a little broom, that has gentle, you know, very kind of a gentle stalk. So this little broom with a gentle type of straw. And they will, you know, sweep the ground gently as they walk. So ahimsa, so as not to hurt anything, you know.
I read somewhere they don't walk on grass.
Yeah, that could very well be because they can't protect. They can't, you know, sweep away any of the things. But it's an impossible task. It's an impossible task. You know, when you really decide, I'm not going to cause any injury. There's no end to it. There's no end to it. And also you're not a sarvajnaha. You don't have all knowledge to really know what is best in all situations. You know, and dharma, adharma, those are laws. It's like I put my hand in fire and then I say, I didn't know that fire burns. It shouldn't have burnt me. I was innocent. I didn't know. I didn't know that fire burns. You shouldn't have burned me. You know? But that's not how it is. Fire burns, and if you stick your fat hand in it, you will be burnt. Dharma adharma is like that also. You know, if you do an action that really hurts another person, you know, even though that wasn't your intention, and so that way you're not accruing punya or papa, but it wasn't your intention, but that is what happened. See what I mean? So it's difficult. You need, that's why even Nachiketa's in the Katha Upanishad, one of the things he said, is there something which is free of this dharma adharma? It's too much of a burden. You know, it's too much of a burden. There's no way that I can ever be good enough. I can never be perfect. It's impossible to reach that. And you'll never be a happy person because you'll never be good enough. You know? And so this is a struggle. You can think like for a seeker, spiritual seeker who believes in kind of the hierarchical spiritual hierarchy. You know, that's a real problem. You've gotten this high, this spiritually mature, you know. But, you know, you only hold that samadhi, you know. You're only able to reach that samadhi state of nirvikalpa samadhi once a week. Maybe if you really work at it. Once a week you get a nirvikalpa samadhi. But, you know, he gets it twice a week. I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. You know? I should really be able to have that nirvikalpa samadhi whenever I want. I'm not able to get it whenever I want. So-and-so says he can get it whenever he wants. I don't know if he's really telling the truth. In fact, I wonder what that nirvikalpa samadhi really is. Do they really have that nirvikalpa samadhi? Or are they just saying they do? Yeah. Is their spiritual experience, you know, is my spiritual experience as good as theirs? One student once told me, came and said, everybody's having these spiritual experiences and I don't think I've had one. No, I don't remember that. I just laughed and I said, well, good for you. You know, I haven't had these spiritual experiences. A lot of people are seeing, you know, chakras when they close their eyes. They see these chakras in, they see the mandalas, you know, mandalas in these certain chakra areas. I haven't seen one. You know, it's all of these things are there, you know. And there'll always be somebody who saw a bigger one than you, you know, or had a longer samadhi than you, you know, or had less negative emotions than you. It's just absolutely endless. There's no freedom in it because as long as it's linear like that, there's always one more thing that you can attain. And so, and then when you look at, say, then when you look at others, you have this problem of these people are better than me. And of course, then you have to have, if you think like that, and this is the real creepy thing about it, these people are all better than me. But then what about these people? These people are worse than me, you know? And so it's hard for me to have friends.
Hard for me,
friends? Hard for me to have friends. Because these people are not as good as me, and these people are better than me. And so where do I fit in?
Lonely.
Lonely. It's lonely. Because, see, even in the situation of peers, there are no peers. There are people who are better and people who are worse, you know. And so I don't fit in. It's hard to have real friends. It's all very confusing. It's confusing. The whole spiritual trip is a trip. Yeah. So anyway, what Krishna says something really nice here. He says a person who is committed to Dharma, and committed to Dharma because they're committed to me, for that person, a person who's committed to me, they quickly become committed to Dharma. These problems fall off, the bad conduct falls off because it's replaced by a commitment to Dharma. When there's a commitment to Dharma, you have a choice. You know, you're committed to Dharma. You see yourself wanting to perform this act. You sacrifice that act for the sake of Dharma, because your commitment is to Ishvara. And if you don't sacrifice it this time, you sacrifice it next time. You know? So these adharmas, the adharmas fall off, and they fall off quickly. Quickly is relative. Quickly doesn't mean 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Quickly means over the period of short period of your lifetime. What's it, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? That's quickly. You've been here from beginning of births. If it only takes you 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, you know, to become really spiritually mature, that's a wonderful, beautiful, beautiful thing. That is quickly. Quickly is like, you know, when you watch a rose bloom from a bud, if you're standing there and staring at it, you know, it's just not doing it. It is not doing it. It's like when we make that chai in the morning, Saturday morning, and I'm watching, waiting for it to boil. Big pot, you know. It just is not doing it. It is moving slowly. That is not kshipram. But from another vantage point, you know, it has only taken 5 minutes for that chai to boil. You know? So for this vantage point, for you to mature, to drop off the complexes, to drop off all of the things that we've acquired over lifetimes and all of the hurts that we've acquired, that takes you 15, 20, 30, 40 years, whatever it is quickly, very quickly, in the course of eternity. You know, your eternity from the past to the present is an eternity. And so in this short period, very short period of time, you gain that maturity. And then he says, hey, Kaunteya is the name for Arjuna, Kaunteya, son of Kunti, his mother. He says, Pratijanhi, may you know with certainty, that Prati is with certainty, may you know for sure with certainty that my bhakta, one who's devoted to me, is never destroyed, na pranashyati. My bhakta is never destroyed. Nothing will ever take him or her away from me. They will attain me. And that's the promise of the Shastra. So even if, so that's why he says in this Abhichet, even if your conduct is outrageous, outrageously bad from the eyes of others, not from my eyes. From my eyes, you are sadhu, you are good. And you will quickly become a dharmatma. All of these things will drop off in a short period of time, and you will gain that shanti, which is me. The shanti which is not bound by time. Then he says, hey, Kaunteya, you know with certainty, know for certain that no harm will, my bhakta will never be destroyed. You know, so it's a really beautiful. And then he's going to go on and develop that, just so you make sure you understand that. You know, that even the worst person who's my bhakta, no harm will come. That person will never be destroyed. So, nice verses. Let's stop here. Life is hard in the computer world.
Don't forget the prayer.
I know. Testing. Oh, we're still on. Testing, okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
I had one little question. This phrase of devoted to me, it continues in both of these verses.
What? Or seeks me.
Huh?
Seeks me. You should think of devotion, devoted to me in the Gita, as the one who's seeking me for knowledge.
Seeking me, then...
Mumukshu.
Again, a mumukshu. Again, the one who wants to be free and have well-being in, or what?
Well, say,
exactly?
You know, the thing is, when you say the one who wants to be free and have well-being, mm-hmm. you mean moksha. Mm-hmm. When you're saying those words.
Yes.
So that's how I'm... But I could say, I just want to be free. You know, I don't want to have to work 8 hours a day. So where your idea of freedom is, you know, getting enough money so that I don't have to work. Or your idea of freedom is to be able to travel whenever you want to. But when you're saying, I want to be free, it mm-hmm. means I want knowledge. I want self-knowledge. I want to know what the truth is. You know, and from in a Hindu perspective... With the Bhagavad Gita, Ishwara, Krishna, you know, who is the embodiment of Ishwara, is teaching Arjuna.
Mm-hmm.
Arjuna has realized who Krishna really is, mm-hmm. that Krishna is the Lord. Arjuna's realized that. And all of this time, he kind of knew that, you know, in the whole Mahabharata. He kind of knew that, but he didn't bother about it, really. He didn't really care, because Krishna was his friend. They were good friends, and he also looked up to Krishna, you know, as a leader and as a warrior and as a king, and was honored to have him as a friend, and looked up to him for advice and counsel. But it was in the Gita, when this is what makes the Gita, where Arjuna really acknowledged really Krishna as more than just, you know, a friend, or more than just a king or a warrior. You know, but acknowledge Krishna as Ishwara, as the Lord. And so it was at that time that he said, that he acknowledged that, and he said, please accept me as a student and teach me.
Hmm.
And so now Krishna is teaching Arjuna as Krishna, as Ishwara. And so sometimes in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is talking, he's talking as Krishna, the embodied Krishna, who is teaching, you know, Arjuna. But at other times, he's speaking from the standpoint of being Ishwara, you know, and as being the Paramatma. So you have to be careful when you're reading the Gita, who Krishna, from what vantage point Krishna is talking. If he's saying, you know, those who worship me, he's talking about himself as Ishwara, you know, not himself as the king. You know, he's talking about himself as the Lord.
And to worship is to know and to understand this knowledge.
Yeah, like say, I know, that's right. Because say the word worship and surrender.
Yeah.
These are really big words. You have to know what they mean.
Yeah.
You can't worship someone that you don't know. You know, let me worship you. Who? Oh, I don't know. You know, you're worshiping someone. You know, you're bowing down to someone. You're surrendering to somebody. What is that? What does it mean? What do these words mean? And so when they're talking about worship in the Gita, it's the one who wants to know. I want to know you. I want to be free. I want to know myself. This moksha, liberation, all of these words are known words. You know? Even the word surrender. Surrender really is nothing but knowledge. How are you going to surrender to Ishwara? What are you going to do? You know? In the end, surrender is knowledge, because in fact you could not be any more surrendered than you are.
Yeah.
Because your body, mind, sense, organs, everything that makes you, the whole jiva, is really nothing but Ishwara. But what allows you to surrender is only the knowledge of that. It's the knowledge that really everything about me is Ishwara. There is, in fact, no me. There is only Ishwara. You know? There's nothing separate. There's no me that is separate than Ishwara. There's no Atma that is separate from Ishwara's self. My Atma, myself, is Ishwara's self. And there's no part of this body that is not Ishwara. It's like there's Ishwara and then my little body is outside of it. So this body and the rug and the space, everything that exists within the creation is Ishwara. You know? So what is left over for you? You have to, in the end, you have to say, I am Ishwara, because there's nothing else but Ishwara.
And this
that's the surrender. Jnanam is the surrender.
And this is the worship then. I mean, this is the,
yeah, the meaning
the, of the word.
Worship, the meaning of the word worship really is the wanting to know. The seeking. Use budgete as seeking. Swamiji, in one of his Bhashya's commentaries, maybe not this one, I think a few back, he talks about this word budge. If you look it up in the dictionary, also it has all of these meanings, to worship, to seek, to enjoy. So you have to use the context, in the context. So here it's really the mumukshutvam. The one who, you know, has a desire to be free, but the mumukshutvam must translate into what we call jignyasu, to become a jignyasu, the one who desires liberation. In the end, that one desire for liberation has to convert itself into a desire for knowledge, for self-knowledge. And the reason is because... In fact, you already are free. You already are Ishwara. You already are free. And so the problem is there's no way for you to become what you already are. You can't become, you can't, if you already are Ishwara, you can't become Ishwara. What can you do? If you already are free, you can't become free. So what is causing you to think that you're not Ishwara? Or to think that you're a jiva, and you're the jiva, and then Ishwara is the Lord. There's the jiva and the Lord, that as though the two are separate. What causes you to think that? You know, or to think that you're not liberated is ignorance. You know, and how do you remove ignorance? Kick it away, or how would you do with it? There's only one way to remove ignorance, and that's through knowledge. And so, who has the problem then? If you are Ishwara, in fact, and you are free, in fact, then who's got the problem? The problem, the one who has the problem is the mind. Because the mind doesn't have self-knowledge. The mind is not away from myself. It knows myself. I am a conscious being, you know. And it knows the creation. You experience yourself as part of the creation, you know. But I'm conscious in the creation, you know. I'm surrounded by the unconscious space. Space isn't conscious. So I'm a conscious bubble walking around in a basically unconscious universe with a bunch of other conscious bubbles. That's my experience from the standpoint of the mind and sense organs. And if I die after death, then there's a soul that must travel around if I live after death, you know? It's always, everything's going to be from the standpoint of myself as a limited being. So even though I'm the experiences of Ishwara, the experiences is of myself is limitless. That's because of ignorance, that isn't recognized. It's what we call the superimposition between this Maya creation, you know, and the reality of it. There's ignorance in between there. It has to be removed.
Yeah, I don't know why I have, sometimes I have a problem with that word worship, but you defined it very well. You know, I was never much of a churchgoer or anything. I went to the ocean for the waves. You know, but I didn't go to church.
You know, but that's a good example, because when you went to surf, you recognized that sacred presence when you were out on the
in the water.
Yeah. You know, the sanctity of it and the overwhelming beauty. It's a spiritual experience, and you used to recognize that all the time. Maybe another person recognizes that when they go into the church, or another person recognizes that in nature, and that becomes, there's a sense of wonder and awe, you know, and devotion to the beauty of all of that. All those feelings are excited in those experiences.
Yeah, and I'd show up every day. Mm-hmm. Every day I'd show up.
Oh, so you were a surfing bhakta. You worshipped Ishwar in the ocean, in the form of the ocean. But that's what Bhagavan says, in whatever form you worship me, you know, I will be there.
But what I found was that showing up to class every day was even better than this ocean experience.
Yeah, so you continue surfing. You're a Vedanta surfer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. No, but that's good. I don't mean.
So you were saying, if there's a split, you can't be a mumukshu? Do you remember you said that in the beginning? What did you mean by that, actually?
What I meant by it, is this, that there are orders of reality. So let's look at it in terms of orders of reality. What is most important to you? You can say, a lot of things are most important to me. And they're most important to me on the same order of reality. You know, like, you know, keeping my house clean and going shopping are both necessities. And they're important to me in the same order of reality. You know, but there are other things that are more important to me on another order of reality. You know, and then on even another order within duality, another level of reality, there's a whole another set of values, for instance, that are very important to me. But in the end, for a mumukshu, the overarching value in terms of importance that doesn't compare with all of the other things that are important is that mumukshutvam, or gaining self-knowledge. That is what is primary. And when that is primary, the whole life and all of these things, subsidiary in things of importance, are sadhanas. Mm-hmm. How I handle each one of the situations that come into my life is always handled in reference to that mumukshutvam, to liberation, to karma yoga, to my relationship with Ishvara, to fulfilling myself in terms of self-knowledge. And so it's not to eliminate the important things that are in Vyavahara, empirical reality. We have things that are important and things that aren't important. It's all kinds of different levels. But there's only one thing that's really guiding my behavior in reference to all of those things. Mm-hmm. And that's the mumukshutvam. Mm-hmm. And if that's not so, then there's something else that's of equal importance. Mm-hmm. And what would that be? Actually, I know, seriously, what would it be? Because everything will be being held by that. You know? And if it's not being held by that, then what is it being held by? Is that in competition with it? Or is that the thing that's of primary importance to you? Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? And actually, if that's fuzzy at all to you, it's kind of a good inquiry just to ask, what really is of primary importance to me? You know, what is of overarching importance? What is the primary value that holds everything that I do? Mm-hmm. And for a mumukshu, it's the mumukshutvam, or the relationship with Ishvara, you can say. Johnny?
I have a question. And that is about what's dharmic. Because, like, I'm just thinking of a conflict that's going on right now in the people that are downtown in Oakland between violence and other... I mean, not violence, but...
Somebody was killed there today.
Killed there today. What? Yeah, in Oakland, right? Yeah, somebody was killed in Oakland. What happened? Somebody was shot. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's
there are different types of people there.
Oh, that was a random shooting. That shooting wasn't connected to occupy people.
Well, I think they're arguing over that.
They're arguing over it right now, and last night they were arguing over it. I don't know what they decided.
Depends on who you talk to.
Somebody put a...
They don't know.
Depends on who you talk to.
Go ahead. You call a proposal to be nonviolent, but there were other people who didn't want to...
Yeah, because you have a lot of different people there with different
view about that. But is there one of those positions that's clearly dharmic in the sense that you're speaking of it, in the sense that Kant talked about a moral imperative? Is there your choice there?
I don't know very much about the situation, but I'm sure it's complex. And you know what? One sad thing is, you know, if you go back in time, like say into the Vedic culture, there were very strict rules of engagement that were considered, these rules of engagement in war, this is the Dharma. There's the Dharma for war, you know, and the Dharma for conflict. There's certain ways that it's to be handled. There's a Dharma. What about when there is no known Dharma for war? Because in the world, war has always been there. And that's accepted in India. There has always been war. And so they had a dharma. There's an Arthashastra even that really goes into all of the different formations of war and what to do, all the things you should do before you get to that point of war, you know. And then if all these major four steps fail, you know, then war can take place. And then if war does take place, what are the rules of engagement, you know? So in this type of a situation, if you ask, well, what are the rules of engagement? Like, what? You know? And then you have different types of people. You know, some people who are very impoverished and uneducated and, you know, are in terrible, terrible straits and are furious. And we just have all different types of people that are acting out in different ways. And some that are trying to be more educated and organized about it. So, in other words, I don't know.
Yeah. That was a long answer.
Unless we're long-winded, I don't know.
Dharma. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Dharma, we could say that Dharma belongs to Mithya, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and when you say Dharma is Ishvara.
Yeah.
That's a little bit outside of Mithya, right?
Okay. Let me just make a little bit of clarification there. We can say on one level, everything is Brahman. And that's the absolute truth of it. There is really nothing here but Satchit Ananda, consciousness which is existence, which is limitless. That's what is here.
Is that the same thing as absolute Shanti?
Yeah, that's the nature.
When you talk about absolute Shanti, that's it, right?
That's pointing to the self which is, in fact,
exactly.
In truth,
that's
limitless. And is the very being of everything that is here. In fact, there's nothing here but that. So like if I were to use the example of the wave ocean, there's really nothing there but water, right? The waves, all the waves in the ocean are mitya, they're maya. They don't have any being away from the water. And like that I can say, the only thing that is here is the self, is consciousness, is Brahman, that's all. That's the reality. That's the Advaita. That's the non-dual. Okay, but now, here we are talking. So we also, from this vantage point of our interaction and what we perceive through our sense organs, there's an infinite universe, okay? Of which you are a part. Your body, mind, sense organs and my body, mind, sense organs are a part of this infinite manifestation. So what Ishvara is Brahman, because there is really nothing but Brahman. So Ishvara is the conscious being which is the very self of this infinite manifestation that we call the creation. So if we only want to talk about non-dual Brahman, mm-hmm. we're not even really in those words acknowledging Ishvara. Mm-hmm. Ishvara is non-dual Brahman, the non-dual self, from the standpoint of the infinite creation. And that's when we say Ishvara. So now what we want to say in Vedanta for somebody who has knowledge is that I am Ishvara. Because if you can say and know what you're talking about, if you can say, I am Ishvara, what you are acknowledging in that statement is that I, who am the conscious being, am the self of this infinite creation, which is Ishvara. If I can say, I am the self of this infinite creation, I'm acknowledging the Maya, which is the waves and the ocean and the water, but I am acknowledging that I am the water, right? I am the water of this entire ocean. And in fact, all that is really here is water. But if I'm acknowledging the ocean, then I can say, make both statements. And as a jnani, some of you have knowledge, I have to be able to say, using the wave ocean analogy, I have to be able to say both things and know what I'm talking about. I have to be able to say, sitting here is a wave, I have to be able to say, I am water. I am the water. And I have to be able to say, I am the ocean. Both are equally true. I am the water, I am the ocean. Because if I am the water, I am the ocean. If I understand the relationship between water and wave, and water and ocean, if I say I'm the water, I'm also saying I am the ocean. If I say I am the ocean, I'm also saying I am the water. And but the thing is, if I say I am the ocean, I'm acknowledging the Maya. Mm-hmm. If I say I am the limitless water, then I'm not putting any focus on the ocean. Now the thing is that the one who's gaining self-knowledge is the wave sitting there. Right? So you and I are the ones gaining self-knowledge. Consciousness doesn't need to gain self-knowledge. Consciousness, limitless consciousness, the limitless being that you are, has no problem. Right? Ishvara has no problem. Because Ishvara is limitless, there's no ignorance at all. You know? But it's the jiva, the individual, that's got a problem. The individual feels, I am a conscious being subject to birth and death, different from everybody else, and certainly different from Ishvara. Separate. I am separate, subject to birth and death. I'm separate from everything, and subject to birth and death, because of ignorance, self-ignorance. You know, because even though you are the conscious being, you know, the mind that's saying that has for its very truth the conscious being that is the conscious being of the whole creation, that mind doesn't know it. And so what has to happen is that self-ignorance has to be removed. So the mind has differentiated its own being from the mitya names and forms, which include the mind. Mm-hmm. You know, like the wave. It is a name and form, right?
Yeah.
But it thinks it is the water. It is the water, but the water is free of it. That's what it doesn't know. If the wave could say, I am, the wave says, I am the water, and I, the water, am free of the wave. Right? The wave is the water, but the water is free of the wave. I need to be able to say as a jiva, you know, I, my mind, body, sense organs, is the conscious being, but I, the conscious being, am free of the body, mind, sense organs.
That's so in this mm-hmm. point you're making, in this yeah. analogy you're using, Dharma is the wave.
Dharma is the wave?
Dharma is Ishvara.
When we're looking at Ishvara, we're talking about the whole manifest creation, which includes the order. You know, the order that holds it together is one entity. Okay. And we say there's also a moral order, which that we call Dharma. But you can say, you know, like there, Swamiji, sometimes when he's talking about the creation, Ishvara, in terms of order, say, you know, there's a biological order, and there's a physiological order, and every order that he can think of. You know, there's a psychological order, there's an emotional order, you know.
And that's Dharma.
Well, there he's talking about, you can say that the whole manifestation is Dharma. But Dharma has a lot of meanings, and we can focus Dharma on the moral order.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
And dharma can also mean karma. But all the time, always, it's going to come back to the reality of what is actually here in terms of the manifest creation. The reality of it. The truth of it. Not the projection upon it. You know? And so this whole creation, this whole it's not just a hodgepodge manifestation of names and forms. Mm-hmm. All of the names and forms are interconnected and in relationship with, so that interconnected infinite relationship can be called dharma. Or we can use focus dharma on dharma as in terms of karma. When we focus on it in terms of karma, we're talking about the moral order. You know, it's like any action that you do is capable of producing punya and papa. That means there's a moral order. And so often dharma, you know, is meaning that. And even when you say things like, it's my dharma, means for me, this is my duty. This is what my obligation. This is what it's my duty to do. That's a moral order. You see?
But so here in 31, verse 31, where it says, when the mind is in conformity with dharma, then there's eternal peace, right?
No, there's two things. When that person becomes a dharmatma, one whose mind, for whom dharma is paramount, and such a person, you know, he quickly becomes a dharmatma, and that person gains a shanti, which is free, really, of dharma and adharma, gains through knowledge, gains me. Because dharma is relative. Mm-hmm. But when, as a person becomes an adhikari and starts to gain knowledge, the mind becomes more, gains more and more shanti, relative shanti. And as they gain more relative shanti, they also gain more recognition and more understanding of that which is an absolute shanti.
Right.
And that is only the self, only Brahman. The Atma has absolute shanti. Absolute shanti means it isn't subject to becoming ashanti. That's absolute. Dharma is relative. The shanti, that the mental shanti that you get from dharma depends upon you doing dharma.
Mm.
Atma does not depend upon you doing dharma.
Mm.
Or adharma. It doesn't depend upon anything. You know, that's why it is free. That's why Nachiketa says, is there anything that is free of the opposites? Free of sukha and dukkha, free of pleasure and pain, free of dharma and adharma, free of, you know, birth and death. Is there anything that's free of that? Because the whole creation is continual birth and death, continual pleasure and pain, you know, continual dharma, adharma. There you can't get out of it. You're bound. You know, and then you're bound by the endless cycle of birth and death. Is there any way to get off of that?
But it's interesting, because if you read Swamiji's translation, it says, quickly he becomes one whose mind is in conformity with Dharma and gains eternal peace.
Yeah, so you think that I know, that's why you have to study
but
the
you're
Bhasha.
Adding that whole other nuance to
so
that.
So is he. You have to read the Bhasha.
Yeah.
And Shankara's Bhasha also. The one who is an adhikari, who has a mind, you know, that is committed to dharma, has enough shanti, you know, to gain what is absolute, the shanti which is absolute. The dharma is not absolute shanti. But the self is absolute shanti.
Yeah, here's there's not even, nobody talks about absolute shanti here. I mean, it's only in the Bhashya, right? The absolute.
He gains shashwat. Well, by absolute, that means eternal. Eternal means free from time. That's absolute.
Okay.
You see what I mean? I'm saying absolute. You can use eternal, but if you use eternal, it has to be timeless. So you have to talk about it. So when we say, when we say paramarthika satyam, we say absolute truth. What makes it absolute? Why do we say paramarthika? Because the definition of paramarthika satyam is that which cannot be lost in past, present, or future.
Uh-huh.
So it's free from time. So here when you say shashwat, eternal, you have to mean timeless. So that has to be unfolded.
Uh-huh.
If it's bound by time, it's not eternal.
Okay.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be a shanti that becomes a shanti. It's just shanti.
Mm.
And that's what
they mean by that. So what you said is it becomes absolute shanti by recognizing that Dharma doesn't get you there, but the understanding of what Ishvara really is.
That's right. Dharma doesn't get you there, but it gets you to the adhikaritvam, that qualified student, the mumukshutvam, that does get you there. Knowledge is what you require, because you already are that. So in fact, no amount of Dharma is going to result. Itself will not result in that. But it results in the type of antakarna, type of mind that is a seeker, that seeks knowledge, and it's the knowledge that gets you that, because you already are that.
The Gita, the war that is the background of the Gita, begins with, isn't it the oldest of the Pandava brothers, who is known as basically the epitome of Dharma? Part of being a Kshatriya is to play dice.
Well, that was one of his weaknesses. He doesn't have to be a dice player, but he had a weakness for it.
Well, he
couldn't say no. That was one of his weaknesses. And so he ended up losing everything.
Here's an ice cream cone. There's this one. When you say that I am the mind, and then you say I am free of the mind, when I say I am free of the mind, that's pretty easy to recognize. But what do I recognize when I say I am the mind?
Why that's important is because otherwise there's two. There's the mind and me. And then the mind has to have an experience of me that's not already there. Say the mind thinks the mind is different from the self, then the mind has to reach the self to have an experience of the self. And there is no such place to reach. The very self that you take yourself to be right now is an ajnani, for somebody who doesn't have knowledge. When that person takes themselves to be the body-mind sense organs, for instance, that person says, I am, and you're referring to yourself, I am this body. Well, the I am that you're referring to is Brahman. There's no Brahman somewhere else. The conscious being that you're referring to when you say I am is only Brahman. There's no other second Brahman experience. It's just that you go on and you say, I am the one who is Brahman, in fact, this body, and therefore I'm going to die. And so what you have to realize is that, yes, this body is Brahman, but Brahman is not dependent on this body. That, yes, I am this body, but I'm not dependent on this body.
Well, when I say I am this body, what extension is that? I mean, how much do I mean that?
Well, you mean it completely once you know it. And until you know it, you kind of have some shraddha. Well, this is what the Shastra says, this is what Swamiji says, and so it must be true. So you believe it on faith, but that's not going to be good enough. In the end, you have to see it. You have to recognize it.
That I am this body.
You have to recognize that this body, that the conscious being, you know, that this body enjoys is Brahman. And that the Brahman is, that you are also free of this body.
Okay.
The thing is like this. Right now, when you say I am, you're saying those words, I am. Those words are referring to you, who you really are, the conscious being that you are. But you think that when you are, that's true, it's referring to you, but then you think that what makes you you is this body, right? But actually, the you that you're referring to, if this body dies, that you is still there, nothing happens to it. But you thought that this body was what was making you have the me experience.
Yeah, it produces
that. Yeah. But when you die, you'll be very surprised. You know? Like when Steve Jobs said, wow. This is so cool. Whatever he meant, but then we can put what we want to it.
Yeah, that's pretty, you know. That's pretty wide open.
Yeah, right. It's pretty wide open, but we can take it pedantically. You know?
Sure.
But that is the the experience, the body is dying, but nothing happens to you. It's the same like when you wake up from a dream. The dream is gone, but nothing happens to you. You know, and that's what. So when you say, I am, and then you think what's giving you the I am experience, the me, is this body, then the body dies, but nothing at all has happened to you. Then you realize, oh, the body, you know, was me, but I am free of the body. Right? It's not like the body was something else. It isn't anything else. There's no, you can't find anything else here. So that's the satyamitya. Find anything else here means you say it's the body, that's a name that you give for a huge number of parts. So everything's to an infinite regress, names within names within names within names to infinite regress. There's no end to it. But where's the substance? The substance is the substance, the being that has always been there, which is me. And the me doesn't change in any way as we go through this infinite regress of names within names within names. You can't actually find a thing here. And you never experience, you experience in terms of the names within names within names of this whole creation, you experience it continually changing, and it's no problem for you because the changing is taking place in the changeless. You know, I am the constant that allows for all of this change to take place without there being any change. There's the changeless within the changing. And in the Bhagavad Gita, as we go through it, you'll say, see, over and over and over again, Krishna is saying, you know, to discover the changeless within the changing. That's what it is. Here's all the changing, but the changing is taking place in the changeless. And what is changing can't have any real being of its own, because it comes and goes from non-being. That's all another thing. Anyway, we're done.
Thank you.
I'm done anyway. I'm done.
Good night.
Well, good night now.
We're going to...